What a breakfast for the Gators, part of the State of Miguel Network and presented by our partner, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, and they are a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate, wills, trusts, or estate planning. And we're proud to bring you a big fan of ours and UF men's basketball assistant coach, Jonathan Sapphire. How are you doing, Coach?
I'm doing well, Jackson. Thanks for having me. How are you doing?
We're doing good. Got the home run derby on. It's kind of the dog days of the summer. The Braves need a little regroup, so enjoying a nice Monday night.
Yeah, it's a night off from the World Cup.
Yeah, tomorrow. I know the Grizzlies play right now. It's a bummer that Wall's not playing.
Yeah, how's summer league been going? I think it started, just a few days ago?
The Vegas one started on Thursday. Utah and the Cali Classic and a couple others had a little different events prior to, but the Vegas is the big one where every NBA team plays. I think that one's going pretty well. I know we have Walt playing or on a summer league roster, but not playing. Will playing, Elijah on a summer league roster, but not playing due to injury as well. Micah playing with the Jazz, Xavier playing with the Cavs, Castleton playing with the Magic, Zion playing really well with the T-Wolves. I apologize if I'm forgetting anybody else, but I think
I saw Micah picked up a contract.
Yeah, Exhibit 10.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Well, how excited is that for you, Coach? Now you got to develop with these guys the last few years. Now you're seeing them on in the summer league. A few of these guys making a roster last year. Elijah contributing as a two-way. Just how exciting is that as a coach? And what kind of message can you provide to incoming recruits, transfers, guys like that with this development of the staff?
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool, right? We have proof of concept at multiple different positions. It'll be even cooler, I think, in future years as Walt, Will, and Elijah specifically. And I think we have a couple of current guys who a couple years from now will be established NBA players where they're going back that first weekend of summer league to hang out with us as opposed to playing, right? And then it'll be really cool when Walt, Will, Elijah, Tommy, Kondo, Ruben, whomever else are kicking it with us in Vegas that first week courtside watching our guys, whoever we have their current Gators playing. That's when it'll be really, really cool and special.
Yeah, well, Coach, I know you're just overseas doing some recruiting. You got to watch Condon play in the for the Australian team. What is it like for, you know, what's the concept when it goes into international recruiting? How do you find the talent? Is there specific leagues you're scouting for? And getting to watch Kondo play for the Australian team, what kind of additional development experience does that provide him as a player?
Yeah, I mean, look, we're obviously a really analytical staff in the way we do things. And that's whether it's recruiting, roster construction, roster management, player development, scheduling, you name it. We try and utilize analytics to find edges, incremental edges on the margins, right? And so that's no different international recruiting, and they have some robust events with great data and FIBAs and different leagues that we kind of peruse and go through and utilize to help foster our international recruiting database. And then from there, it's doing a deep dive, watching the players, trying to get an understanding of their families, their backgrounds, if an agent is involved, who the agent is, if we have a relationship with the agent, if we have connections to the player or the club or the school or whatever it may be that he's with or at. And then from there, obviously just trying to see if it's a match like any other recruit. With Kondo specifically this past 10 days ago or whatever when I was in Australia, it was a really cool experience. It was really cool to be there for his Australian national team, his Basketball Australia senior debut against Guam. Guam was an inferior opponent. They took care of business and won pretty handily. But it was great to be there for the 3 or 4 days I was there. I saw a couple of practices. Basketball Australia welcomed me like family with Kondo in terms of practices, meeting with the head coach, meeting with the GM of Basketball Australia. It was cool. It was a great opportunity, great experience. Obviously, incredibly happy and thrilled for Kondo. And it's an opportunity for him to make inroads with the Australian national team to hopefully be a part of their World Cup roster in Qatar in 2027 or the LA Olympics in 2028. And then ironically and actually in 2032, Brisbane, Australia will host the Olympics. So that'll be pretty cool as well.
You kind of were talking about the international recruiting and the approach you guys take. And so sort of one of, I almost feel like the dumbest gripes ever from Florida fans online is that we haven't had the Darren Peterson type or the one and done five-star guys like Adarius Acuff, so to speak. So I know you guys are obviously recruiting just the best players that fit your program, but what is sort of your philosophy with specifically with roster building when you're kind of weighing, you know, okay, we have a super highly touted 18-year-old versus a portal guy or putting money into retention or things like that. What's your take on that?
It's an incredibly complicated question. And those who apparently complain about the fact that we haven't had a Darren Peterson or an AJ DeBanza or a Michael Brown would be correct. And we want guys with great attitudes, great work ethics, and guys who really want to be here at Florida and Florida Gators. And those guys could fit the bill. And if they do fit the bill, or if we identify them and we think they fit the bill, and we think they have the ability to be super impactful as freshmen, like Cam Boozer, we tried to recruit, we will go after them, right? We need to have a connection there. There needs to be a draw or an appeal. But it's just really hard to win having to likely sell your soul for an 18-year-old when there's 22, 23, 24-year-olds playing in our conference. It's not to say that a Darren or an AJ or a Cam are not going to be really good as freshmen. Cam was the National Player of the Year. AJ was a really good player. Now his team only made the second round. Darren's team only made the second round as well. Like, it's hard to advance when your best players are freshmen in college basketball, but they were obviously super impactful. But there are three or four of them. It's those three: Caleb Wilson, Keaton Wagler, who kind of came out of nowhere, Kingston Flemings, Michael Brown, but even that, he only played 12 or 15 games or whatever it was. And then after that, it's not a lot. So especially in America, with the way people look at and value high school basketball rankings, we don't recruit rankings. We recruit guys who fit our program and what we want to do, and we evaluate ourselves. But with the way people recruit rankings and utilize rankings and use rankings, what happens is these freshmen become very, I don't want to say overhyped, but they just come with a lot of promise, or they come with a lot of notoriety. And then when you get them as freshmen, to beat out the 21-year-old next year, it's going to be super hard. And if they don't do it, they might run for the exits because they can transfer whenever they want. So we try and find guys who we can keep for multiple years, and we're incredibly honest, diligent, thoughtful, and intentional in our recruiting. And that meticulous nature and meticulous approach allows us to be so honest on the front end that we can coach them, we can hold them accountable, we can grow with them. And then we can hopefully and ideally, as we've done now for multiple years, retain the guys we want to retain.
Yeah, and to that point, Coach, this team might not have a Darius Acuff or an AJ DeBanza or a Darren Peterson, but what they do have for this year's team is 7 returning national champions, 87% of the production from 2025-26 going into this coming season. And that's a team that was a 1 seed, won the SEC last year. How difficult is it as a staff, and how creative do you guys have to get to find those edges analytically and those areas to improve when there's so many known variables on this team that are coming back from a year ago?
Yeah, I don't think we're just going to roll the balls out and expect to win the SEC by 3 games again and have a plus 15 scoring margin, whatever it was during that ridiculous stretch we went to and through in February. But yeah, obviously having the expectations, the guys with experience, returning 87% of the scoring, all the great things you said, is certainly better than the alternative, right? It'll come with a great deal of expectations. People are going to talk like the world crumbles whenever we inevitably lose a game or go on a losing streak or whatever it may be, because we are not going to go 40-0. We're not going to go 18-0 in the SEC. We'd love to go 13-0 or 14-0 in the non-conference, but it's going to be very difficult. Like, these are just realities that you face, right? Like, we have an awesome opponent opening night. There's a 40% chance or 45% chance or whatever it is analytically that we're 0-1 after the first game of the year. And we're likely to be the unanimous preseason number one team, right? These are just things that we understand come with the expectations and result of being able to retain all of these guys. So we're going to try and keep things fresh. We're going to try and change a few things, tweak some things, always looking to get better, always trying to find ways to improve on the margins and on the edges and not just rest on our laurels and really be aggressive and attack and try and hit first in every game. And all the jargon, the mannerisms, whatever you want to say, but we're going to use those expressions and use those things to try and keep our guys fresh and juiced up and ready to go, because the season does get long, right? Our goal is to be peaking in late February, early March, into mid-March, into late March, and hopefully first week of April. So
Yeah, and to kind of to that point, how much has the offseason changed? I mean, when you have so many guys that have gone through one, two, three off seasons before at Florida, are there certain things that you guys like to do differently to switch it up, or is there, you know, something that you can do as a staff in the offseason to get guys ready and to keep things fresh and to keep them hungry going into a season where you're the preseason number one team and have, you know, the weight of the world on their shoulders?
I think Coach Golden is an incredible coach, an incredible leader. He's obviously special in a lot of ways. Where I think he's the best of the best is his people skills and understanding what buttons to push at different times. And this summer is a great example. We will practice and be in the gym, and our summer program will be less in terms of time than ever before at Florida. We're only having a 5-week summer program. We did 3 weeks on. We gave the guys 10 days off around July 4th, and then 2 weeks on, we're finishing up this coming Friday. And that's it. Now, it's less in terms of actual days in the 5-week program because you're allowed 8 weeks, all of the above. But I didn't say less in terms of intensity, less in terms of physicality, less in terms of what we're accomplishing. We're being very intentional in what we're doing. A lot of shooting, a lot of physicality, a lot of pickup, 4 lifts a week with Coach Lopez in the weight room, being meticulous in our planning. But we're also trying to keep our guys fresh with the end in mind of trying to play our best basketball. And like I said, in that March, April period, understanding that 7 returning national champion players played their last team standing 18 months ago or whatever it was, however long ago now, and then carried right into a hectic offseason, culminating in being a number one seed, a top 5 team, winning the SEC by 3 games. And then obviously a disappointing round of 32 result in Tampa against Iowa. And we want to be cognizant of that, giving these guys their time and space, being intentional when we're with them in the gym, and then keep it fresh. Then when Labor Day rolls around or late August, when they're back in classes, we can kind of hit the ground running.
Coach, you've now been a part of Todd's staff for nearly a decade now. If you could just educate the story of you two getting connected and the increase in your responsibility since being part of his staff, specifically being elevated to assistant coach last season.
Yeah, I Coach Smith hired me at Columbia as a grad manager. After 1 year there, he got the San Francisco job. I stayed to finish my degree and said, he told me when a job comes open out west, I'll bring you with. He was true to his word. A couple years later, I went out to San Francisco as his director of basketball operations, which where I crossed paths with Coach Golden. After 1 year at San Francisco, he got the, after my first year there, 3 total for him. He got the Washington State job. Coach Golden got promoted. We had a great working relationship. Over time, I got promoted there. We were fortunate enough to win a lot of games. My responsibilities grew with regards to analytics, in-game strategy, recruiting, all of the above. And then, obviously, after an awesome season there, we got the Florida job, and my responsibilities and our trust in one another and our relationship and our friendship has just continued to grow. I consider him one of my closest friends. I know he does as well. Our wives hang out all the time and are super close. Our families are close. It's a great partnership and pairing, and the responsibility on and off the court with regards to obviously the basketball component, and then off the court, the roster management, the GMing, so to speak, has really just continued to rise each year with additional responsibility. And we've obviously had a great modicum of success.
Is the ultimate goal to become a head coach yourself?
That's a great question. Head coach. For a long time, I was kind of debating if I was successful enough, college head coach or NBA GM. And then the way college basketball has transformed before my eyes, head coaches kind of do both, kind of become GMs and head coaches. So, yeah, I'd say probably college head coach right now. But I'm going to ride this thing as long as possible with Coach Golden. I think we have a good thing going. He has a great deal of trust in me, autonomy, responsibility, great work-life balance. Like I said, our families hit it off and get along. And it's hard to beat being back-to-back one seeds, national champions, SEC champions, SEC tournament champions, returning the guys we're returning. It's a joy to coach. And so I'm going to take each day, enjoy each day, cherish our time we have here and how special this run has been and see where it takes us.
What do you like more, the GM aspect or the actual on-court coaching aspect?
Well, now we're getting to the nitty-gritty, Will, and I think that's a great question that, you know, I get the best of both worlds. In the off season, I get to help coach with the GMing, and then when practice rolls around in September, and obviously our summer workouts, but really in September and through March and April with scouting and practice and film study and all the above, I get to dive full in on that. So I really enjoy both, and it keeps my crazy mind busy and occupied and learning and growing, and it's great challenges. I really enjoy both.
You were talking about how the off-season program, when Devin asked, you said it's a little different. You're going, giving the guys almost, you know, a different program. So what is one thing that you guys are really focusing on that you want to become the identity of this team?
Well, I mean, I think we should have the best front court in America with Tommy Condo and Ruben. I think that'll be the identity, is that when you play the Florida Gators, you're in for a battle, and we want to own the paint every single night. So I think that's our identity and who we are, and it's who we were last year, and we'll be hopefully an even better version of that this year. I hope that answers your question. Obviously, we hope to have a little better shooting throughout the course of the season. Obviously, we shot the ball much better in February and March than we did in November and December. And we try to work on that both in terms of our style of play and minute allocation allotment, and then also some of the guys we brought in. So we'll see what happens.
So, sorry, I had a little echo there. Obviously, you were mentioning you had a disappointing loss to Iowa in the round of 32. So how do you balance sort of sticking with the process, knowing that, you know, it was kind of really just some unlucky balls not going in, Iowa making some shots, a couple, you know, even tip passes at the end, ball going out of bounds and them getting the ball. How do you balance sticking to your process versus changing up things when you go through the off season with the larger goal of trying to win a national championship in mind?
Meaning because of the Iowa loss specifically?
Yeah, just because the end result wasn't as good as obviously in 2025 when we won the national championship.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of different ways to kind of work through that question. It's the beauty, the blessing, and the curse of March, right? In 2025, we played four really close games. We went 4-0. We beat UConn in a close one. We came back from down 9 with 3 minutes to go, whatever it was, against Texas Tech. We were down 12 against Houston. We were down double digits against Auburn. Won all four of those, 4-0. Cut down the nets. Historic. The next year, our first close game in March sends us packing. The best way to win close games, especially in March, is to not play close games. So if we want to avoid that luck, avoid that variance, avoid that volatility, it's putting ourselves in a position to be up by 12 or 14 with 2 minutes to go against Iowa, not up 2 with 25 seconds to go. And to answer your question with that game specifically, you know, Iowa did an awesome job. They had a great game plan. I would say in addition to them executing incredibly well and us not executing very well, they got us uncomfortable. We couldn't pick up the pace. They played the game at their pace. It was also, when you speak of volatility and variance, people often think of three-point shooting. Well, it was actually a rim variance. Cam Manwahu and Tavion Banks put every ball in around the basket. It was our worst rim defense game, I believe, since our first year at Florida. It was certainly the worst of the Ruben Shinyulu era. And a lot of that is luck. You know, they go up and try and finish through Condo and Ruben, and normally we say good luck. And if they beat us, they beat us. Tip your cap. Well, this time they beat us. They made every single two around the basket. It was an incredibly talented and impressive feat and display. So process-wise, I mean, nobody done that to us ever. And I wouldn't bet on that being a great recipe or formula to try and beat us moving forward. But obviously, in March, you try to win six different best of ones. It isn't a best of seven with Iowa. If it was a best of seven with Iowa, I would like our chances to win that series to win four before we lose three. Unfortunately, it's a best of one, and they won in that 40-minute game. It happens.
Coach, that loss is almost kind of like a blessing in disguise, where we wouldn't be talking about Tommy, Condo, and Chin, potentially all three returning. I know you mentioned this on the show earlier in the season, but it's a new era of basketball. I think you talked about dealings with Florida Victorious are being negotiated throughout the season. And you had, I believe, some contributors re-sign before the regular season even concluded. What's the process of trying to maintain, retain your talent while keeping the focus on winning basketball games?
Yeah, I think to your point, you're exactly right. I don't think Tommy comes back if we beat Iowa and progress further in March. I think it's a very fine line, right? You want to engage in these conversations. Coach Golden he and I met, and he tasked me with talking to a lot of these agents and having these conversations. And you have to build up good enough relationships with them that you understand that the conversation may go awry. You have to be mature enough, professional enough to know that by engaging in these conversations while games are still going on, you invite tail risk of not being on the same page. And that can neither, you have to accept professionalism and responsibility and accountability, that it can neither impact the mindset of the player or not let it get back to the player, that the conversations have not necessarily gone well, or the head coach in terms of not being like, oh, I'm going to play this guy less because I don't think I'm going to get him back next year anyways. And so going in with that mindset, having those conversations, being honest, setting the stage and the tone and the expectations, and then just having a normal conversation and developing enough trust and goodwill and relationships that people listen to you, you're honest with each other, you have good conversations, quality conversations. And we were able to knock out a half dozen or more guys signed, not just agreed to, but signed before March Madness even began.
And kind of talking about some of those depth pieces that we were able to retain, looking at guys like CJ Ingram, who was basically, you know, seventh part of the rotation, seventh, eighth man early in the season against Arizona, and then kind of having that lull before towards the end of the season, kind of finding his stride again and finding what his role would be. He had a good game in the tournament too in round one. What is that process like selling the development of guys like CJ Ingram, like Alex Lloyd, to a lesser extent now because his role's blossomed, but Zay Brown, those guys, how is it making them see the vision, trusting the process for how their role will expand the more that they develop and the longer they stick it out with the program? Is that something that you found to be difficult and something that those three guys have bought into over the last couple of seasons?
Well, it's definitely difficult, but it becomes easier when your messaging doesn't change year over year, right? We're so honest with these guys in the front end before they step foot on campus of what the expectations will be, of what it'll likely look like, of their role and responsibility, of how we see things playing out, and the type of guys we want in our program, that it just becomes another layered conversation the following year. Hey, year one went more or less exactly how we expected or what we talked about. We told you to have an opportunity to compete for playing time. You could break through. It would be very difficult. We expected to be really good. We were really good. You competed for playing time. You didn't get playing time. It's okay. We still believe in you. This is all part of the plan we talked about 12 months ago. Now we expect you to make a jump. Let's talk about that jump. So when you layer it and factor it in that way, by continuing to be honest, by continuing to be direct, it makes those conversations, I don't want to say easy, because they're never easy conversations, especially when you're dealing with potentially emotional parents or agents when their player or kid isn't playing or playing as much as they want. But we can just rely on our truth and being honest and having the right intentions and the development. Just because they're not playing doesn't mean we're not working on them development-wise. We're getting them extra work. They're in there with Coach Vic. They're doing our stay ready 4-on-4 games. They're getting their extra skill working with Torian. Like, we're working them like crazy. Just because they're not playing in the game doesn't mean we don't care about them.
Coach, you talk about building the trust with the guys like Zay and Alex Lloyd and CJ. And, you know, you've discussed how successful you and Coach Golden and the rest of the staff have, and even the guys like John Anderjack and others who have gone on to become head coaches now. When you were walking into Florida and, you know, Florida was kind of, it stagnated a little bit. You know, we'd only missed the tournament in the most recent season, but it was not obviously the Billy Donovan era of Florida basketball. What gave you guys the conviction as a young staff to come in there and know that your blueprint for the program was going to work?
Yeah, I mean, having belief in ourselves and what we're doing and our processes, but there was obviously no guarantee that it was going to work. We could have very easily lost Zion Pullen or not gotten Zion Pullen in early June going into that second year. We could have lost the recruiting battle with Walter Clayton to St. John's and Coach Patino. Tommy and Kondo may have become just okay players instead of all-time great Florida Gators who stayed for their fourth year. Those guys should be – we should enjoy the heck out of them and celebrate them like crazy for their return and the careers they've had. I mean, there are a ton of lucky breaks. But we create our own luck too with our processes, having backup plans, pivoting, just kind of trying to be forward thinking and trying to find ways like I talked about at the beginning of the show, to gain incremental edges on the margins.
Did you ever, when after that first year when we went, we had a losing record and missed the tournament, did y'all ever waver with your process, or was it more of, okay, this is still going to work if we really get down to it, we just need to make a few tweaks here and there?
I think the latter. In that first year, though, we didn't do a good enough job in the transfer portal, and we're obviously swimming upstream, but we understood where we needed to get better, how we needed to improve our processes, dollars needed to come into Florida Victorious and supporting the basketball program. A lot of things needed to get right, and Coach Golden did an awesome job formulating a plan and a vision, and us being able to trusting his staff. And like you said, Coach Hovde, Coach Anjak was brought in at that time, but obviously Coach Hartman's played a huge role, Coach McCray, Torian. But just the job that like a guy like Carlin Hartman has done can't be understated, and enabling us and believing in us to be able to get the job done. And to answer your question, you know, Coach Golden and I kind of have a motto that we preach or internally discuss in terms of our processes and how we go about it. And it's system, talent, and culture, and kind of in a virtuous cycle, right? And that what that'll do is when you have that system, that talent, and that culture, is that it'll give you high floors all year, high floors every year. And then when you get to Walter Clayton, or you have him have a performance like he did in March of 2025, and you catch a few breaks, you can break through and obviously reach the summit, reach the peaks. And that's what we want to do. We really try and have a floor-raising system via our systems, our talent, and our culture.
Coach, you mentioned Thomas Houck and Alex Condon being just all-time great Gators. This is going to be a difficult question, but at what point over the course of their career was it that you said, wow, these guys are special? Was there a specific game, specific practice, specific time where you saw the vision you had for their development really starting to blossom?
So we got here March of 2022. Condo committed to us. I think we played Tennessee and beat Tennessee February 1. Is that right, Jackson? You got the date in front of you?
I don't have the date in front of me, but early February sounds about right.
Pretty sure it's February 1. And for a long time, that was the best day in our program's time here while we were here in Florida. We beat Tennessee at home. They were number one in Ken Palm at the time, like two or three in the AP poll. And Condo, obviously having no idea we were about to play a game, called Coach Golden and I to commit to Florida about 10 minutes before the game started. Coach Golden and I are sitting there in the locker room, and Condo calls him, and Coach didn't answer. He goes, Condo's trying to call me. Can you give him a call? I said, sure. So I call him, and he's like, hey, I want to commit to Florida. And I was pumped up. I went back and told Coach and the whole nine yards, but I was like, Condo, that's awesome. We play, and I'm looking at the clock. Now it's 8:15 left until we play. I got to go. I appreciate it. I'll call you after the game. And kind of his ability to not know any better was the first sign that he was going to be awesome. He didn't care. He had no idea. It's the same way he played as a freshman. He had no idea whether we were playing against Arkansas or Arkansas Little Rock. It didn't matter to him. He was just going to go try and be an ass kicker. And then the day they came on campus in May of 2023, Tommy and Condo got here in time for Summer A, and they instantly hit it off, became best friends. And they were just, the two of them were just, there was the only two guys on campus, and they were just working their ass off, asking Vic for workouts, getting in the gym, playing one-on-one, shooting. Their shot looked way better than we thought it was, both of them, and made way more shots. And they were just attacking every day like monsters a month before the rest of our guys got there. And we looked around as a staff. I remember Hove, Hartsey, Coach Golden, and I'd be like, this shit ain't normal. These guys are going to be special. How special they're going to be, obviously, we couldn't have anticipated necessarily or expected this. This is in the top 1% of the range of outcomes. But it was pretty early on we identified, noticed, and understood that what we have cooking with those guys ain't normal.
Coach, I applaud you. It was February 1st, 167-54.
It's a date ingrained in this memory. It was our best day as a program until we made that SEC tournament run our second year. And then obviously our third year, we had a lot more awesome moments and have since put together some special moments.
Coach, there's a lot of different metrics out there, a lot of new websites. You know, we've had a KenPom for a while, Evan Maya, a lot of different databases for us fans to go look at, compare ourselves to other teams. Is there a stat or metric that the public might undervalue that your coaching staff holds to a high standard? And, you know, for us, it's, and I think I talked to you about this in the season, like hockey assists for transition baskets. You know, Micah, I thought we did a really good job with that. There's any metric that you guys look deeper in than maybe the public does?
Yeah, I don't know if it's not necessarily an individual metrics, but it might not be exactly what you're asking for. But one that we really prioritize and look at is are you familiar with Bart Torvik?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
So if you pull it up and go to Bart Torvik and then click our page and go to our schedule and results. I'm not sure if you're there or not, but I can keep talking through it.
Yeah, I'm pulling it up.
Okay. Let me know when you have our screen up that shows, you know, our Arizona 93-87 loss, our North Florida 104-64 win, our Florida State 78-76 win, our Miami 82-68 win, our Merrimack 80-45 win. Let me know when you see that screen.
Let me go here.
Dax, you got to be faster with this stuff, man.
It's automatically jumping to 2027 already.
I know. You got to go 2026 and then.
Jackson, is there a way to share our screen so we can look at it as Coach goes through it?
Yeah, every time I click 26, it updates to 27 again. So I don't know what is going on here. Here we go. There we go. All right. Give me 1 second, Coach. I'll see if I can share my screen.
Let's see what kind of technology we have here on this on the screen.
Look at that. Maybe are we able to see it?
We need some more sponsors to funnel in the money to up the technology.
Right.
Yeah, we need the sponsor to start chipping in a little more.
All right. Are you able to see my screen?
Nope.
Oh, got to change the podcast. The Breakfast Boys got to be able to adjust on the fly a little quicker, Jackson.
Yeah, we do. This is troubling. So you cannot see my screen.
We're competing. I see in the bottom of my screen, but it's not like on the picture that shows live preview to these eyes.
Dang.
Regardless, click Florida.
Yep, I'm on it.
Okay, and then go to our go down our schedule and results.
Yep.
And then go all the way to the right.
Yeah, the plus minus.
Nope. Game score.
Oh yeah, okay, I see. It's on. Yeah, I got it.
So our Auburn game was a 44. Unbelievably bad for where our standard was last year. Our Vanderbilt was 58. But look at our Florida State was 82. So even though we won that game, it was an 82 game score. We played significantly worse than the 96 game score we had against Arizona in the loss. Okay, so remember those numbers. 96 Arizona, 82 Florida State, 44 Auburn. All right?
Yep.
Now, go back to the rankings of 2026, the homepage, 2026
yep.
rankings.
Yep.
Then go to Barthag, which is like the fourth or fifth line over, which is what these rankings are based off of.
Yep.
Okay, so now a 96 last year would have put us as the ninth best team. You see that?
0.96. Yep, I got it.
So against Arizona, we played like the ninth best team, even though we lost. 82 Florida State would have put us at
the ballpark of 50.
We played like the 53rd best team. Ironically, Florida State was 52. Then 44, our Auburn game, which is our worst performance over the last multiple years.
You're down there at New Orleans and Missouri State at 199.
So that's kind of how we look at things, right? Is process over result for a lot of this stuff. And game score is a great metric that shows how we perform relative to expectations, agnostic of winning or losing. Like our national title year, I remember our South Carolina game at South Carolina, I think it was our lowest game score, I believe, off the top of my head by margin, even though we won that game miraculously.
That's cool.
I'll be utilizing
that now for every single game, so appreciate it.
It kind of goes back to what you were talking about with the raising the floor and sort of eliminating the variance. And I love that you and Coach Golden and the staff touch on that and focus on it so much. Cause I think, I can't remember if it was Will Miles, shout out to him, but I believe it was him, but somebody did a breakdown of the best. They did it in the context of college football, but they were talking about what separates the guys like Nick Saban and Steve Spurrier and just the all time greats, the Pete Carrolls, versus those who have ultimately been fired by the Florida administration. And really, it was one score game avoidance. And so the ability to blow teams out and prevent any variance from entering where you have tip passes and, you know, receiver drops the ball or running back fumbles it or something like that, and all of a sudden you lose a game and the season can be over and it can tank easily. Yeah. That just very, very reflective. And so we, as diehard Gator fans, we appreciate it because, like you were saying, the massive floor and the run you guys have been on has just been so much fun to watch and experience.
I appreciate it. Thank you for saying that.
I have, you know, everybody talks about last year's team and how it was disappointing, but you did mention that they had an incredible run there sort of in the late January, February, where they, again, were looking like the best team in the country, notwithstanding the couple losses to in the non-con. So looking back, what do you think was something that they did that was actually better than the national championship team?
They as in us?
Yes.
Yeah, I think from after that Auburn game through the Arkansas game, I think we're the best team in the country. Unfortunately, I think that Arkansas game ended up being the peak of our season. And I think comparing the 25 and 26 teams, obviously our late clock shot making in 2025 was second to none and arguably one of the best in the history of the sport with Walt, Will, and Elijah. But the 2026 team was more physical inside, better rebounding team, better rim defense team than 2025, and pretty damn good across the board, just not quite as good shot making, and obviously didn't have the late clock options to balance out, because a lot of times possessions, especially in March when the game slows down a little bit, game gets bogged down, you need some late clock shot making that we're really hopeful. Boogie makes a jump this year, and obviously Denzel, assuming he gets cleared, and Irby can help us with, and Alex Lloyd as well. So we're excited about that, but I think the 26 team was a little more physical, a little more size, and then a little better in the paint and on the glass. But, man, that 25 team was special. It was so well constructed. It was, the pieces fit together. We're going to look back 5, 6, 7 years from now, and there's going to be a half dozen NBA guys on that team.
Was there a point last season where, you know, you're looking at the three-point shooting numbers and you just know that it has to correct itself? Because it seemed like you get halfway through the season and you're looking at guys that aren't shooting the way they have their entire career. Boogie Flan is one that comes to mind first with what he did at Arkansas as a freshman versus what he was early last season. Was there a belief that would turn around the way it did as the season progressed? I think we were, you know, there wasn't any point during last season where we were a top five, top 10 shooting team in the country, but that percentage went from, you know, the 200, 300s in the country up into the closer to the top 100, 34, 35% by the end of the season. What did y'all maintain that belief as the season went on that those numbers would balance themselves out?
Yeah, because throughout that process, we consistently measured our shot quality and whether those were taking the right shots. And when you take the right shots, eventually they'll fall, especially if the right people are shooting them. Boogie obviously struggled from three relative to his career numbers. We expect that to revert back to his career norms this year, but he made a huge jump finishing at the rim. He was a sub 35% 2-point finisher against quality competition. I think maybe even sub 30. He was north of 55% from two against tier A and B this past season. Kondo obviously had a cold spell shooting to start the year and then shot less as the season went on, but made a couple of them. We expect him to make a jump shooting the basketball. Obviously, Tommy made a jump shooting the ball. His percentages stayed consistent, but he took double the attempts, so that's a jump in itself. We expect those attempts to probably stay similar, maybe a little more, but the percentage to go up again a little bit. Irby obviously broke through, shot the heck out of it. The one that was surprising in a frustratingly disappointing manner shooting the basketball-wise was Xavier Lee. He was a great playmaker, great secondary ball handler, better defender than we thought. Great IQ, played fast, did everything we asked for and more, super coachable. The reality is, though, surrounding him with Boogie, Tommy, Kondo, and Ruben, we brought him here to make shots, both off the catch and especially off the dribble, to be a late clock option, to be a tough shot maker, to create the separation. He did all of those things. Unfortunately, the ball just didn't go in. He created shots at a separation and open shots at a better clip than he did at Princeton. He was getting better looks than he got in the Ivy League. For whatever reason, those shots just didn't fall for a lot of the year here at Florida.
I guess you can kind of directly point to when they did go in. You know, you guys went up to Nashville and beat a pretty good Vanderbilt team with him making some pretty sweet step back shots there toward the end.
No question. He's an awesome player. He played really well for us in a lot of games. Obviously, he struggled shooting the ball early and a little bit late. But that was just the one early on that we were like, damn, like we did, we expected maybe some regression, some capacity for some of these guys, but that was not the one. But all in all, he had a very good year for us.
With talking about Boogie, you were saying that his shooting was a little, it wasn't quite as good as it was his freshman year at Arkansas to begin the season. And actually, when a lot of people were criticizing Boogie, our one Jackson Raymer was reminding everybody that he had off-season surgery, and predicted that Boogie would return to form. And then toward the end of the season, he started shooting the ball much better. So do you think that the injury history there with the sort of the weird summer schedule kind of influenced that at the beginning of the year and he kind of had to get into a rhythm, or was it truly just the shots weren't falling?
I think a little bit of both. I think it certainly played a role. I think both with X and Boogie, the increased accountability, increased demands on the defensive end. Boogie, we asked to pick up a little bit more earlier, three-quarters court, and really hound ball handlers. X, we helped way more accountable than he was ever held accountable at Princeton in terms of defense, and also for both those guys rebounding. Like, all that stuff takes a little bit more energy than maybe you're used to. And maybe it's you're 5% more tired than you think without even knowing it, and that impacts your legs just a little bit with the shot. Elijah certainly talked about experiencing that the year prior. It took him until the Southern Illinois game, where I think he made 8 threes, to really break through, asking and meeting all the demands of going from the FAU to the SEC and playing the 3 or the 4 to playing the 2 for us and guarding the ball and working the full 94 feet. That was an adjustment for him and his legs. So it takes these guys some time, both with the speed of the game, how fast we play, and the demands and the accountability we hold them to, in terms of defensive assignments, defensive rotations, blocking out, all the little things that equate to winning that matter to us, that we hold these guys accountable to, whether you're Walter Clayton, Alex Condon, Xavier Lee, Boogie Fland, it don't matter.
Coach, just a few rapid-fire questions before we get out of here. Kind of hard to gauge because rosters are so ever-changing in this sport right now. So I'll go based off of last year, or maybe years prior. Toughest opponent you scout in the SEC offensively and defensively?
Vanderbilt offensively. Coach Byington does a great job, a lot of different actions. He's had great guard play every year. Stopping them is always very hard. And then to score on Tennessee at Tennessee just feels impossible every time.
you guys do a pretty good job of it.
Only at home or on neutral sites. We have not won at TBA yet. It's a funny, if you look at the splits, first year here, we were the 50th best team there, the first or second best team. We beat them at home going away. The second year, they routed us there. We were pretty good. The third year, national championship year, we beat them by 30 here. We went there and lost by 25. It was our worst loss in the last multiple years. Then this past year, and we met them in the SEC title game. That was a neutral site game. We won in a close one. And then this past year at our place, we rolled them. So next year we only go at their place and we have that one circled.
I don't know what it is about TBA, but even during the Donovan areas when we won back-to-back titles, we got upset there. They stormed the court. We wore these blue Gator-scaled alternate jerseys. I don't think we've worn them since, thank God. I actually wore it to the Tennessee game when we lost by 25. I had the Lee Humphrey Gator scale jersey on. His parents said, never wear this again.
Jackson had he ordered his Lee Humphrey jersey back in 2006 in a size medium so that he could wear it 20 years later.
Smart man.
It's good that I love that, you know, you guys have won a national championship and followed it up with the first ever back-to-back one seeds in Florida history, reigning SEC champions. And you have two things that you haven't accomplished. You haven't started 1-0 in the SEC that everybody jokes about. And then you haven't beaten the Vols at Thompson Bowling. And so you guys have two things that you can circle and say, we got to knock down those pins and we'll have done it all.
We do have a third still looming. It's undefeated when Denzel hits a three.
That's a good
game against the Gators.
Yeah, we never trailed against Kentucky in 120 minutes of basketball this year. And we're not afraid to let Denzel know.
We're not afraid to let Big Blue Nation know either online. Trust me, we've got.
I don't think I can overstate how much that actually means to these Gator fans who have been going to Florida basketball games since, you know, even going back to the Lon Kruger era. Just Kentucky has always dominated us up until really Billy Donovan, and so to be able to stick it to them like that, even with like the disappointing loss to Iowa, but just to thoroughly kick their butts, it is just so much fun to watch. It's so great whenever you guys do that.
Certainly better than the alternative.
Absolutely.
Coach, what goes into the decision-making? Kentucky only comes to Gainesville. Last year, we only had a trip. 2 years ago, we only had a trip to Rupp Arena. That used to be the primetime game. The SEC play them twice. You play them early in the conference slate, and then you play them on senior day, whether in Rupp or Gainesville. Do you guys got much say in that process of getting them scheduled twice?
No, we have no say. Obviously, when Texas and Oklahoma joined the league, so prior to that, we had to play five teams twice, and we had three annual opponents, and that was Vanderbilt, Kentucky, and Georgia, and then two wild cards. Then when Texas and Oklahoma joined the league a couple years back, they changed the pairings. We only had three two-time opponents, and they went with Georgia and South Carolina for us because geography, rivalries, relationships, all of the above, and then a third wild card two-time opponent. That first year, our two-time opponent wasn't Kentucky, so we only went at Kentucky. Then this past year, it was Kentucky, so we played them home and away. And next year, this upcoming year, it's not going to be Kentucky, so we'll get them home to kind of even that out. And then I think moving forward, I'm sure they'll try and make it a two-time opponent as much as they possibly can. But I know there's a ton of factors at play that go into it. And I know Garth Glissman does an incredible job with the SEC conference schedule and taking all factors into consideration. And they try and make it so that your three opponents are relatively even across the board, right? So if Georgia projects to finish eighth and South Carolina projects to finish 14th, then to make it so that, you know, our average is eight, they're going to try and find a team that's projected to finish in the top three. If Georgia or South Carolina become top five type teams, I would imagine we're going to get whoever's projected that year 15th or 16th. So it's kind of a sliding scale. And Garth does a really good job with that.
Coach, I know that we have several marquee matchups this coming season. You got, you know, Texas is going to be really good in the conference schedule. Texas A&M is supposed to be good. I think I can speak for a lot of Florida fans. They're really excited to see Duke come into the O'Connell Center. Is there one matchup as a staff that you guys are looking forward to circling in this coming season?
Yeah, Duke at the O-Dome with how that game ended last year on the road, the whole nine yards. I know the fans are excited about it. Our players are excited about it. We're excited about it. It should be an incredible atmosphere. I would argue going into it's July 13th, Gator Nation shouldn't let us down. I think, and maybe I end up regretting saying this, but it should be the biggest non-conference game in all of college basketball, and it should be the most raucous and rowdiest crowd and environment and biggest college basketball game of November and December. Certainly the non-conference is the Gators, the 2025 national champions, the 2025 and 2026 one seeds, the 2025 SEC tournament champions, the 2026 SEC regular season champions by three games, returning or getting at home a return from Duke, who we lost to by one in the SEC-ACC challenge in nail-biting, excruciating fashion, and Duke, who has made one Final Four 2 years ago and then was incredibly close, as close as humanly possible to making back-to-back Final Fours this past year, who's obviously the gold standard of programs in college basketball. So it should be an incredible environment.
Might be the biggest non-conference regular season game in the history of Florida basketball, and that's a pretty high standard. There's been a lot of big games played in Florida basketball history, and that's right up there, potentially number one versus number two. It's going to be awesome.
I can't say that on July 13th until both us and Duke hopefully start the year really strong. If us and Duke do what we're supposed to do and start the year really strong, I think that would be accurate.
Probably be top two with the Ohio State, Greg Oden coming to town way back when.
Yeah.
And but I love that we're in that kind of competition again.
To your point, Devin, it's a true home game, right? A lot of these games have gone neutral because of the finances and NIL and all of the above. And the SEC-ACC Challenge allows for awesome opportunities with true home games and atmospheres like this.
It's going to be awesome.
Coach, back to rapid fire. Most improved player from October to March last year.
October to March. So during the season?
Yeah, during the season.
Isaiah Brown.
Outside of Zay, one player that surprised you the most last year?
That surprised me the most? Tommy seamlessly transitioning to an entirely new position and being a first-team unanimous All-SEC player is not discussed enough. It didn't surprise me, it didn't just surprise me per se, but it was incredible.
What is it that made that transition so tough that you don't think people talk about enough?
Well, the way we play, our fours and fives are relatively interchangeable in the middle of the floor, and our ones, twos, and threes in the perimeter and continuity ball screen and trying to relentlessly rip middle like guards do is how we play. And Tommy went from being mostly at the four to mostly at the three. So his responsibilities in the offensive end were totally flipped.
Toughest arena to coach in on the road. You had Duke last year. You had Kentucky. You've talked about Thompson Bowling Arena.
Rupp has a ton of people, but it doesn't get incredibly loud.
Well, it helps
when you lead 120 minutes.
that as well, and Walter Clayton sending the game to overtime a couple years prior. I would say Cameron is obviously up there. Reed, Texas A&M is monster. Auburn's a monster. Vandy with the different where you are on the baseline is difficult. But I would say probably right now, Texas A&M or Auburn.
Staff's best in-game adjustment last year.
What did you say?
I was going to say, hold on, quick question, because you mentioned Auburn, and we also lost that one last year, and you said that was our worst performance. So do you have that one circled with everybody who talks about Coach Golden's relationship with Stephen Pearl and everything?
Do people talk about that?
I feel like it was mentioned a couple times on air and on ESPN and whatnot. Jimmy Dykes probably mentioned it a billion times.
Oh, I apologize, by the way. I don't mean to cut you off, but the toughest place to play is obviously Tennessee. We haven't won there. I don't know why. Texas A&M and Auburn are the next two. I mean, of course we have it circled in terms of our guys' mentality, but it's just another game. We were able to get them at their place when College Game Day was there 2 years ago and then obviously beat them in the Final Four. So there's some sweat equity into that relationship, into that rivalry, into that experience, and it's always fun to compete against guys you know.
Staff's best in-game adjustment last year?
Ooh, quite a few. The Duke one, going zone for a couple possessions, was certainly up there.
Was that the start of the second half when we trailed by, I think, double digits or close to it, and then we got it inside 3 points?
Yes. Yeah, throughout. And then obviously it didn't work in terms of end result, but process over result, going small, which we hadn't done all year against Iowa, was a great adjustment and went to more switching. Having said that, you know, it takes a lot of guts and belief for Coach Golden to pull Ruben in that situation. I think it's a great example. If that was a best of seven, Ruben would have found a way to be insanely impactful games two through however long that series would have gone to. But in a best of one, when he doesn't have it or can't figure it out, he wasn't afraid to pull the trigger and take him out. And that was a big time adjustment. But he's obviously an incredible player, the National Defensive Player of the Year, right? Second team All SEC, should have been first team All SEC. We expect him to have another monster campaign.
I was going to say, real quick follow-up there. You mentioned how you switched to go small. How tough was that for the actual guys on court whenever you hadn't really played small the entire season?
Well, a lot of those guys were in the program last year, and we experienced a little bit of it. I don't think it was overly difficult. Obviously, it would have been easier if we had some preparation for it, but it wasn't overly difficult.
Coach, we see you guys pregame practices, videos of the half-court contest you guys do, and walkthroughs and pregame. Out of the coaching staff, who's winning the three-point contest? I know you got Torian Green, who hit a lot of big shots as a Gator on staff.
Todd, and I'm not sure it's close.
Really?
He might still be the best shooter in the program. Him or Irby.
So did he beat Walt last year in a three-point contest?
I don't know if they ever had a three-point contest. Two competitive guys. I'm not sure it makes sense for Coach Golden to engage in that kind of battle, but it would have been a hell of a battle.
Well, awesome, Coach. We really appreciate you joining us tonight. Again, we're part of the Stadium Gale Network and brought to you by Willis.
You didn't say, sorry to cut off, you didn't say game shooter. You said practice shooter. Walt's obviously a better game shooter. And so is Irby. But in practice shooting, I think Walt, Will, Irby, and Coach Golden would make for a hell of a shooting competition.
So are you saying if Todd, for some reason, got his number called in the game, he wouldn't make the big shots?
I mean, go look at it. And I think he would. Go look at his numbers. Todd Golden, St. Mary's basketball. I mean, he led the nation in 3-point shooting his last year. Now it was way less attempts. He shot 39.5% from three for his career. He shot 46% from three his last year. It's only 3.8 attempts. So not a ton of attempts, but a low usage shot maker. 46 from three is obviously big time.
You guys got to pull in Lee Humphrey and see if he's still got it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Well, we appreciate it, Coach, taking in almost an hour with us on your Monday night, especially as you kind of finish up the all season. Good luck in the 2026-27 season. We'll be cheering you on, and go Gators.
Awesome. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for having me, and go Gators.
Go Gators.
Thanks, Coach. Go Gators.